Zorba Pastor on your health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Now, Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Do you have a question for Zorba? Then call 800-462-7413. I'm betting Zorba will help you out. In addition to our good listener calls, Zorba, we have some interesting research.
Right. Unemployment, if you're not employed, does that affect your immune system? We know if you're not employed, you may not have health insurance, and that's an issue. But are you at risk for certain diseases? Kind of interesting data on that.
Okay.
And Parkinsonism, is it linked to pesticides? In other words, if you're exposed to pesticides, does that increase your risk of Parkinsonism? And what can you do about that?
Okay. Looking forward to those and our recipe.
Quick draw tortilla rolls, Tom.
I love the title. Very
quick
good.
Quick draw. There you go.
Gives it the Western flavor, and my assumption is this is going to be fairly easy to put together.
Very easy.
Oh, good deal. And we have a medical myth buster coming up a little later, so you'll want to stay tuned here to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Let's see if we can help a listener now, Zorba, in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I'm calling about my 13-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She misses lots and lots of school. She's starting high school next year, and she is always sick. Everything that comes around, she gets.
Uh-huh.
And we want to get her healthy and get her immune system stronger so she doesn't miss a lot of school once she starts high school.
So this has been something that's been going on for a long time.
Yeah, I'd say most of her life. Mm-hmm. She gets everything.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how some kids that can just happen to. How many are in your house? How many kids are in your house?
Right now, it's just the two of us. Her brother is a freshman in college.
Okay, so you don't have young children, because that is a common way that kids often get illnesses, because they're around younger children. You know, maybe there's daycare in the house, and, you know, there are other young kids in the house, because, you know, little kids always have viruses around.
Right.
You know, she... In terms of what she does she eat fruits and vegetables? What are her eating habits like?
She's mostly a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
She eats lots of vegetables, fruit juice. She drinks lots of water.
Okay, so her diet is good.
Yeah.
What's her weight? Is her weight appropriate? Not too heavy, not too thin?
I'd say she's average, yeah.
Okay, so she's average. She has all that. Vitamins, what does she take?
We've started a multiple vitamin.
Good.
Through the years, we've
good.
Tried different things, and
mm-hmm.
nothing really made a difference, so we never really stuck with it.
Okay. Well, there are a couple things that you may be able to do. First of all, there is no absolute answer to this.
Okay.
We know that there are some kids who get more respiratory infections, viral infections than others, or it just throws their body more for a loop than other kids, so that where somebody may walk around with the sniffles and go to school, and the other person gets 102-degree fever,
right.
which
That's
clearly
her.
Debilitates them.
Okay.
One of the things you can do is I like the soapless cleansers, Purell, and the reason is often that's how you end up getting infections. You get infections by the fact that you have bacteria on your hands or a virus. You scratch your nose. That's the portal of infection. And what I would do is I'd buy her a little bottle, keep with her, you know, in her knapsack or whatever,
okay.
and I would encourage her, when she remembers throughout the day, to kind of put this on.
I should add that she is a major germaphobe, and she is constantly washing her hands and using antibacterial
okay.
stuff.
So if she's a major germaphobe, that's not going to do much. The other possibility is vitamin C. Some people believe vitamin C can make a difference. And at her, what's her weight about?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, just roughly.
120? Less than that.
That's 100 pounds?
Maybe 80? Between 90 and 100,
okay,
yeah.
So I would say 250 milligrams of vitamin C four times daily. That's what I would do. In the morning before she goes to school, when she comes home at supper and at bedtime, try to get in at least 3 doses a day. 4 doses would be better.
Okay.
And I would keep that up, because sometimes vitamin C can make a difference.
You don't think more meat in the diet would help the immune system?
No. I think vegans can be just as healthy, and vegetarians can be just as healthy.
And there are no
that.
Supplements that
no.
you suggest?
Well, the vitamin C would
other
be about
than the
with
vitamins
that. That's about it. You know, the other issue is how are your, you know, what's your child eating? You know, are they eating fruits and vegetables? Because those are loaded with nutrients that we need to fight infection. But some kids just get more. The good news is this. Often, the more infections like this that you get as a child, the fewer infections you get as an adult. So she is building up antibodies, and that's, you know, that's kind of...
We have our research that you talked about, Zorba, connecting a bad immune system with unemployment. Maybe her daughter should get a job.
Yeah, maybe you're trying to get a job. That's right. It's that unemployment that's giving her too much stress. I love it, Tom. There you go.
Great.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And good luck.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, let's talk about that, Zorba. Unemployment may drain the immune function.
That's right. This is a very interesting article. First of all, we know that stress can affect immune function. There was an article that actually came out of the University of Wisconsin a couple of years ago that looked at meditators, people who meditated, people who didn't meditate. They gave them a flu shot, and lo and behold, the people who meditated appear to have a brisker immune response versus those who did not meditate. And this was a study where they were looking at other aspects of meditation. But this particular study came out of San Francisco, 100 unemployed adults between the ages of 25 and 45 and sort of followed them over a four-month period. And then they looked at their age, sex, race, education level, other things that will, you know, that can make a factor. For instance, we know that the older you are, the less likely you are within certain realms to give a good immune response. And what they found, though, was there was an independent risk factor with employment. The unemployed group had weaker natural kill immunity from their natural killer cells, which is a type of white cell, than the employed group. And about 25% of the unemployed participants found jobs during the study. And when they found their jobs, their killer cells came back. Mm-hmm. So in other words, over this four-month period, if they stayed unemployed, their white cells were not functioning well. And once they got employed, their white cells started functioning better.
So they, the researchers, or you, attribute this to stress? Is that the deal?
Well, I would... there are a couple things going on here. First of all, when you're employed, you tend to get up in the morning and go to work.
Right.
So part of this may not be employment. It may be the regularity of doing something.
It could be diet, too. You were just talking about diet.
Absolutely. Could be diet. You know, for sure, when you're employed, you go and you tend to be at a job where you eat at a certain time of a day, yeah. And maybe they were eating better. Maybe it was the stress of being unemployed. We know being unemployed when you don't want to be unemployed is a stressful event. So I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's one of these social aspects which appear to affect our health so dramatically, just like we know that people with strong social relationships appear to have fewer heart attacks. It may be that people who are employed have a better immune system.
It's interesting because most employment is not stress-free. In fact, a lot of people who are employed working every day feel that stress is a very, very major detriment to their lives. So maybe there's a different kind of stress to unemployment than there is to...
Right. Well, often there's the monetary stress of unemployment.
Exactly.
And that may take over from that. Most people who are, quote, unemployed want to be employed, and they can't find a job. I mean, otherwise people are called retired or not working. And some people are called independently wealthy. They weren't studying the independently wealthy. They were studying the unemployed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both groups don't work. One is more stressful. One has much less stress in their life.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Though, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. Question for Zorba? Just give us a call at 800-462-7413. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi, hello.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a question about my tongue. It's always very cracked and very sore, and I'm wondering if there's something I'm doing that I should stop doing, or I wonder if you could tell me why it hurts so much.
Sore, cracked tongue.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So what makes it sore? Are there certain foods that tend to make it sore?
Well, sometimes it can be just sore regardless, but I've noticed that it really stings and really hurts when I eat things like salsa or maybe something with a lot of lemon juice in it. Or even if I eat, you know, a nice apple, it'll hurt.
Sure. This has gone on for how long?
I've noticed it for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I did try, someone suggested that I try more B vitamins. That didn't...
Okay. What else did you try? Did you try lactobacillus, or did you try yogurt, or did you take any vitamin C, anything along those lines?
No.
Okay. Eating habits, you know, what do you eat? Regular food, special food? Are you a vegan, macrobioticist?
None of the above. But,
but macro, the reason is there are people who followed Seiji Ozawa, who was the macrobiotic guru, and they developed scurvy because they limited themselves from fresh fruits and vegetables and basically from anything that contained vitamin C. Hmm. And as a result, they had scurvy, which then produced a tongue that was often tender and red and uncomfortable. Huh. So,
well,
you know.
I do have a lot of food allergies, and so I have fastidiously avoided, for example, wheat. And I don't eat wheat.
Mm-hmm. But that would not do it. But you eat fruits and vegetables?
Yes,
okay.
I do.
I have a couple suggestions. First of all, I would try vitamin C. Once again, sometimes vitamin C can really be a healing vitamin. And I would try 250 or 500 milligrams. I would get the vitamin C that dissolves, lozenges, ones that you chew so that it will actually come into contact with your tongue. Tom is smiling because I said lozenges correctly.
Yes,
this
you
is
did.
Lozenges.
I'm very proud of you.
He is so happy that I actually did it, that I'm educable and I can actually say the word correctly. So I'd take those lozenges and I would leave them on the tongue because sometimes that would help. And I would take 250 to 500 milligrams, probably three times daily. I also would have yogurt, and I would have yogurt and make sure it says live culture. There's some yogurt that's dead culture. That's cheap yogurt on the whole. Cheap generic yogurt often is not live culture. Huh. It just is. They use other, I don't know why, but that's what I've noticed. So I'd get Danone yogurt or something else that yogurt play, but it should say live culture on there. And then I would not wolf the yogurt down. I would eat slowly. And the reason is it has lactobacillus, and you want that to repopulate your mouth. And the third thing I would do is I would get some lactobacillus capsules, tablets that you actually chew, and they produce lactobacillus in the mouth. Those things may cut down a lot on the cracking, the burning, and the uncomfortableness that you have there.
Does protein have a part to play?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I would doubt it. Why? What?
I don't eat very much meat at all. I'm not a vegetarian, but I only eat meat like maybe once or twice a month. But I do eat a lot of legumes.
But you get your protein from legumes. Yeah, that would be fine. Mm-hmm. No, as long as you're getting it from. And if you don't get protein from somewhere, then you would need to do that because you need protein to live. But if you get it from legumes, that would be fine.
Okay.
Good luck.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
very
thanks
much.
A lot for the call. I will point out, Zorba, we have now had two calls, both callers having health problems, and neither caller eating much meat. Can I rest my case here?
Yes, you can. A sample of two, Tom. You're absolutely correct. The meat eaters are healthier in our society than the vegetarians. I got it.
Hey, what's with you and vitamin C? I thought you were a C skeptic.
No, it depends. I think vitamin C has a place, and I think it often has a place in cases like this where it may make a difference. I'm sort of warming up to C. I'm warming up to C.
I've noticed. 800-462-7413. Three is our toll-free number. Zorba, let's see if we can help out Jack in Traverse City, Michigan now. Seems that whenever Jack goes for a run, so does his nose. Every time he begins to jog, his sinuses drip from both sides. What can or should he do?
Well, first of all, you don't have to do anything if your nose is dripping when you're jogging. But sometimes it's very bothersome. You don't like it dripping, and it bothers you. There actually is a spray that he can get. It's a prescription spray. The over-the-counter sprays are not good unless you only use them for 1 or 2 days. The prescription spray is called Atrovent. Atrovent. Mm-hmm. And it comes in two strengths, and what it does is it decreases dripping. And it's a spray that a lot of people use when they drip, when they exercise. It's called, what he has is something called vasomotor rhinitis. Mm-hmm. You've heard that term, of course.
I've heard you mention it a time or two. Yeah.
A vasomotor rhinitis, and what it means is a nose that is highly sensitive to even slight changes in the atmosphere and the environment with exercise and so on. And so what happens is, his nose is hyperactive.
So spray that stuff.
Spray the stuff. It'll stop. And some people spray it. They do it once or twice a week. Some people do it every day. It depends on how much it bothers you.
Yeah. Our producer, Adam, here's his aid to the show.
Okay.
I'm mentioning his name because I don't want to be held responsible for this.
Okay.
An old joke says, Adam, how come your nose runs and your feet smell?
I don't know why.
No, that's the joke.
Oh, how do you know, Scott? I'm sorry.
What do you mean, why?
That I didn't get it.
That's the joke.
I didn't get it.
Your nose.
You know, when you can't even get a joke, either there's something wrong with the joker or the jokey.
And sometimes both. We like hearing from you. Just send your comments, questions, and tips to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 1-800-462-7413. A listener in Heartland, Wisconsin now. Hi.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Zorba. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
I am a pretzel fanatic, and what I'm concerned about is salt intake.
Mm-hmm.
Every evening, I grab my bag of pretzels and a glass of milk. I go upstairs, and I go to bed, and I do my reading, and I sit and munch on the saltiest pretzels I can find.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard Zorba in the past state you got to watch sodium intake. So the older I get, the more I start to watch my diet and concerned with my diet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm worried how much is too much salt. I don't salt my food, you know, during the day or anything else. I eat food the way it's prepared, so I don't add anything to that. And the second thing is I've heard somebody mention to me, well, you got to be careful because you can leach out good vitamins by taking in too much salt.
Zorba?
Uh-huh. So you love these salty pretzels, huh?
Yeah. I
eat the whole bag? Is that what you do?
Not in the night, no. But I'll probably eat a quarter pound of salty pretzels.
So I want to get this picture. So you go upstairs in your bedroom, in bed.
Yes.
You turn on the television.
No, a book or a magazine.
Book or magazine, and you eat pretzels for how long? I want to get a nice picture of this visual picture.
Half an hour, 45 minutes.
Okay, oh, so in the half an hour. And while during that time, you're drinking, what are you drinking with your pretzels in bed? Drinking milk.
Milk.
Milk, only in Wisconsin would you drink milk.
Pretzels and milk.
Come on, I mean, you're supposed to drink beer or something else. You're drinking milk with pretzels? I mean, that's a little childish, you know? No, no, it's you know, milk goes with everything. It doesn't matter what it is. I think it's the only place where you go to a restaurant and they still serve you milk, and you see adults sitting around the tables drinking a glass of cold milk or sending milk back because it's not cold enough. It's got to be really ice cold milk.
Ice in the milk.
You put ice in the milk. You see what I mean? I knew it. Yeah. I knew it. So now you've been doing this for many years, right?
Yes.
Yeah, many years. I mean, obviously, this is not a new habit. This is an old habit. You know, there are a lot of worse things you can do in your life, you know? I mean, sodium is a player for people who have high blood pressure and are sodium sensitive. That's what it is. For most of us, if we have normal kidneys and we do not have high blood pressure, we can handle the sodium. Yes, the feds, CDC and the FDA says we're eating way too much sodium, which is true. On the other hand, I have yet to see proof that we actually cause disease by too much sodium unless we have problems. You know, congestive heart failure is another good example, and there are other diseases where you would want to limit it. So, no, I think you can get your intake here and not salt your food. A lot of people get their intake from salting their food. Do you eat a lot of prepared foods, or do you make your own food?
Half and half.
Because prepared food, just to let you know, is often very high in sodium.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're concerned, you could drop it off in there. But I've never really been an anti-sodium fanatic. I've never been on the anti-sodium bandwagon. We've got to rid ourselves of sodium because I happen to like salt, and I don't see any hard evidence that shows that it really is bothersome except
I've never heard you say, Zorba, how much salt is too much salt.
No, well, the feds have a recommendation. I don't remember. The average person, I think, gets 5,000 milligrams a day of salt, and all you really need is about 2,000 milligrams, something in that nature. Once again, if you got a normal body, you'll excrete it. You're sitting there. You're drinking your milk. You're reading a magazine. So let's look at the good habits. You're not watching television. You're not getting drunk lying in your bed, and you're not smoking cigarettes. So I think the salt and milk and magazine, much better.
Yeah, the only little bit of danger is the wife getting upset because I'm crunching away on these. She's pretty much gotten used to that now.
Wait a minute. So she's next to you going to sleep?
Going to sleep, usually.
So she's going to sleep while you're chewing on there and tossing, and the salt is kind of getting... Doesn't the salt get on the bed?
Yes, and then I got to get out of bed before I go to sleep and brush it out. Because it burns, if you don't get it out.
I have a suggestion for your wife.
Yeah.
Clock radio or a radio with NPR on it. While you're reading the magazine, she can be enjoying NPR.
Absolutely. Public radio.
And if it's boring NPR, it'll help her go to sleep.
That's right. That's exactly it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Our pleasure.
Did I say boring NPR?
It doesn't exist.
I must not. Somebody else must have said that. Thanks a lot for the call. More coming up, including our recipe for quick draw tortilla rolls.
Absolutely delicious.
These are not salt-free.
They're not salt-free.
Yeah. As I say, more of your calls. We have our medical myth buster coming up. More research. Lots of great reasons for you to stay with us here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again is 800-462-7413, and we have our recipe now, Zorba, for quick draw tortilla rolls, which are sitting in a little plastic container
right in front of the two of us. And if you look at them, they're really they're nice, they're colorful, and they look ready to eat.
These are like about a silver dollar rolled width and an inch or so deep. They look good, except for the black olives, I will say.
But I happen to love black olives. Yeah. By the way, you think silver dollar is an old-fashioned term. How many silver dollars do you think youngins have seen?
Not any, but I think they probably are familiar with it one way or another.
That's exactly.
Yeah,
we'll
it's bigger than a half dollar.
Yes,
they know
right,
that.
Right.
And yeah.
Okay. So quick draw tortilla rolls.
Right.
Tortilla rolls. Okay, and this is a heart healthy recipe. So what happens is, you know, you're looking for an appetizer. It's summer or it's winter or it's spring, and you want an appetizer. What do you do to make your appetizer better? In this case, we're going to start out with 2 tablespoonfuls of fat free cream cheese.
Fat-free cream cheese.
Now, cream cheese is interesting. When you spread it on a cracker or if you spread it on toast, it has generally about half the calories of butter. So if you butter your toast or butter your bagel versus cream cheese your bagel, you're already saving 50% of your calories. Use fat-free cream cheese and you're down to about a third.
You would think it'd be the other way around.
No,
but
it turns out
cream cheese would be fatter.
No,
it's not.
Butter is basically oil. It is much more caloric dense than cream cheese. And this is, you know, fat free for something like this is a good use of that.
Right.
4 tablespoonfuls of shredded reduced fat cheddar cheese.
For Big T, shredded reduced fat cheddar cheese.
That's right. Reduced fat, not a no-fat cheddar cheese, but a reduced fat. It's just like, you know, reduced fat mozzarella.
Yeah.
Good in something like that. Certain things I find I still like the taste and can use a fat-free product and it'll taste good.
Mm-hmm.
4 tablespoonfuls of salsa. If you want the mild, use the mild. If you want the medium, use the medium. Or if you're like Tom, you use the hot.
Yeah. 4 Big T. Some kind of salsa.
That's right. Would you go for the hot salsa?
I would, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You like that spicy stuff. 2 tablespoonfuls of green onions chopped.
2 Big T chopped green onions.
That's right. 1 tablespoonful of black olives chopped.
1 Big T of chopped black olives.
Right. Now, and if you don't like olives, I know you're not partial
to black olives.
I'm not
a big olive fan. Right.
No, then you would leave those out. You could use, for a different taste, you could use Carmenta olives, but they usually don't become pit. They're not pitted, so you'd have to actually pit them. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen those little pitters that pit olives?
I've seen them, yes.
Yeah, they're fun little things. Yeah. My mother always
I've
had
I've never
one.
Used them since I
my
don't
mother,
eat olives,
My so. Mother made me pit the olives for her parties. I have no idea why she didn't. Maybe they were expensive in those days.
What a slave driver.
My mother was a slave. Yeah, you know what else I did besides pitting the olives? I put the cigarettes in the cigarette container. She'd have these little gold. They were like little gold containers. And I'd have to buy Kent cigarettes, Kent with the Micronite filter.
Yeah.
And I would go all around, and I would put cigarettes all around the house, so people would just reach, I guess in those days, for a cigarette and smoke.
I remember my dad having kind of huge parties.
Yeah.
Everybody getting drunk, and I would bartend for the
enabler. And you would bartend for them
as a kid,
drunk?
I would spring the
really?
Drink.
Really? Bartend while they all got drunk. Yeah. That's funny. And you were a little kid.
Yeah. Well, you did the same thing with cigarettes.
Yeah,
and
cigarettes,
enabler.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was the enabler of smoking,
right.
And look where I am today. I mean, a disenabler of smoking.
Right.
A quarter teaspoon of chili powder.
Quarter little tea chili powder.
And 2 6-inch flour tortillas.
2 6-inch flour tortillas.
That's right, flour tortillas. Now, in a small bowl, stir together the cream cheese, cheddar cheese with a fork until the cheese is incorporated into the cheddar cheese, you know, together. And so basically it makes one mixture. And then stir in the salsa, green onion, black olives, and chili powder finally. Then spread the mixture evenly on the tortilla, then roll up the tortilla, cut off the two ends and discard, and then cut the tortilla into 4-inch pieces and serve it. And
these are kind of bite-sized if you have a really,
really
big
good.
Mouth.
These are bite-sized. Let's see. How do you like
I'm just stuck one in the mouth. Yeah.
Oh, you, yeah, wait a minute.
You do good recipes.
These are good.
They are good.
But
we have a program to do, right?
Yes, we do have a program to do. That's right.
So I'm going to say, with a mouth half full of a quick-draw tortilla roll, that we're happy to send you this recipe. Just address your request to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin. Our zip code is 53706. Be sure to enclose a self-addressed, stamped, business-sized envelope. We'll send the recipe along to you.
Or come to our website at zorbapastor.org. You can get that recipe, see what Tom and I look like, and sign up for our weekly podcast.
That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener with us now in New Gretnaw, New Jersey. Hi.
Hey, how you doing today?
Fine. How can we help you?
I had a question about preservatives in the food that we eat. I know that most foods have preservatives in them and that they control the amount of preservatives that they put into the food, but if you're eating food with preservatives every day, then it doesn't add up to like a lot, and isn't that bad for you?
Well, that's you know what you bring up is such a good question in terms of foods. There are different preservatives that are used for different foods. Like, how much bacon do you consume? Bacon, sausage, cured meats. Do you consume a lot of that?
I really hadn't eaten any of those like processed breakfast meats until like this year, and I try to stay away from them, but I do eat them probably. Maybe once a week.
Now, wait a minute. What happened this year? This year, you decided to get rid of your good habits and go towards bad habits?
No, I was just a really picky eater when I was younger, and I've just started trying new foods.
So, see, nitrates and nitrites are exactly what are used to preserve meats. And there's sort of one kind of, if you will, there's sort of one kind of preservative that the feds for many, many years have looked at and have decided to keep in the food supply for some very important reasons. The reasons are, you know, the risk of actually having bad food if you don't preserve them with nitrates and nitrites is greater than the theoretical risk of what nitrates and nitrites will do. Although you can buy sausage and bacon that is nitrate-free, and nitrite-free tends to spoil very quickly. It's expensive, and that's not where most of it is consumed. Now, if we look at fresh fruits and vegetables, that's interesting. If you go to an organic grocery store like Wild Oats or Whole Foods or Trader Joe's, what you're going to do is you're going to get foods that don't have on the whole preservatives on them. For instance, the packaged lettuce is not going to have sulfite in the packaged lettuce, which is what comes in a typical grocery store. So that's another way of sort of cutting down on it. I think one thing is, first of all, we don't think that these things build up in the body, but we always are concerned about preservatives because they're chemicals. Yeah. On the other hand, they keep our food supply healthy. And so, you know, we're not as likely to get bad stuff within the food supply as often when we use preservatives, and the shelf life is longer. So the food remains more wholesome, but it does have this sort of bothersome side effect. I want to go back to those eating habits. You used to be a picky eater when you were younger, and what was a picky eater?
Like, I would only eat peanut butter and jelly or chicken fingers or pizza.
Oh, that's what I call a picky eater. What did you have for breakfast?
Today?
No. When you were a picky eater.
Oh, when I was a picky eater, just like Eggo waffles.
Eggo waffles. Okay, so you had certain things that you would eat, and then what motivated you to change?
I don't know. Just I got bored of always eating the same stuff.
Good.
Figured might as well. It can't really hurt me.
Yeah, I've got a book for you. I highly recommend a book called "The Man Who Ate Everything."
Oh,
I've heard of that.
The Man Who Ate Everything. It's a great book. It's about a guy who was a Vogue magazine food critic. Now, Vogue magazine is not on my list of things to buy. I must admit, I don't get Vogue magazine
at
home.
But he was
the food critic, and what he did is he started putting together a series that actually took him about 4 or 5 years to develop. And the series was he wanted to go and eat everything that he couldn't stand, but get the best of. So, for instance, he talks about calamari, which is squid. He didn't like it, so he went to Greece and had the best calamari and then did a calamari recipe. And he went to Africa and he ate, fried insects, deep fried insects. Oh, and he would go, and the story...
Well, that's a wonderful way to con your employer into giving you a nice trip all around the world.
It's all over the world.
By agreeing to eat
all
a
over
couple
the
of things you don't like.
All over the world. That's
what
right.
What a wonderful
went to,
idea.
Went to Greenland, ate blubber, and then
could
he went
we
to
get
other
away
places.
With that?
Then he went to Italy and ate.
We'll talk to public radio higher arm, and we'll get a tour around the world eating stuff we don't like.
I think they'll give us.
You do a book
and that's
on
about
it. Except
man,
it's already been done.
It'll be the. I know. No. No. The Doctor Who Ate
the
Everything.
The Doctor. Yeah.
The Doctor Who Ate Everything.
Much different. Yeah.
The sequel to The Man Who Ate Everything.
Yeah.
It's The Doctor Who Ate Everything.
Okay.
How can you go around the world and not get sick?
Yeah.
That's right, you see. But anyway, I would recommend that. And I want to commend you of doing this as an adult. It's a tough thing to do to eat foods that initially you found sort of you didn't like when you were a child.
Yeah. But now it seems to me you've avoided the question he asked by calling it the theoretical concerns about preservatives. Are there concerns?
I can't take
and how
you
much
anywhere.
Preservative can.
Because I know that certain preservatives that are used in America are banned in other countries.
Yes, yes. Well, as you notice, I did avoid the question. Well, the answer is this. The feds have said, first of all, if we look at Europe, and in Europe they have stricter things in terms of insecticides and pesticides that can be used on fruits and vegetables than we do. So they're stricter with that. In terms of food preservatives, the feds don't really know. See...
Sorry about that.
see, they've got an opinion.
Another voice has been heard.
Another voice. In terms of, now talk about preserved food, we're not going to get into that discussion. But in terms of how safe these are, we don't know. We don't know. So some people say, look, I don't want to take any risk at all. I'm going to have organic fruits and vegetables. Right. And that has become a bigger and bigger portion of America because not knowing if they're healthy isn't good enough. In other words, and if you take that route, the answer is organic. That's what it is. And organic is certified organic. That means you're not going to get a hold of those. And the reason is we know that a lot of the cancer that we have in our society is environmental, and we don't know where it comes from. Undoubtedly, it comes from some of the chemicals that we use. Whether it's the chemicals in the food system is up for grabs.
Thanks a lot for the call, and thank your dog for joining in, too.
The dog is a public radio listener.
Yes. 800-462-7413. We grab a quick question now, Zorba, from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This one comes to us from Veronica in Juarez, Mexico.
Way to go. Yeah. I didn't know.
She's listening to our affiliate in El Paso,
right across the border. That's cool.
She writes, is it true that if you stay seated for long periods of time, like in an office or if you're a truck driver, you will develop kidney problems over time?
No.
Can I finish?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I often get urinary infections, and someone told me it was because I stay in a seated position for long periods of time. And the answer to that is no.
Yeah, I don't think there's any evidence that people who
no
sit down a lot. No, there are a number of things that can cause urinary tract infections, especially in women. Traditionally, although they've never been studied, that if you wipe, you should wipe from front to back versus from back to front, that you should stay well hydrated. We know that we think that's a factor, that if you become dehydrated and your urine concentrates, it's more likely to happen. We also know it can happen with sexual relations, that certain sexual positions are actually more likely to produce urinary tract infections, something called honeymoon cystitis, which is a typical recurrent urinary tract infection that would often occur in young couples.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that sexual relations can also be a factor there. And then there's the unknown, which includes having repeat urinary tract infections. It's one of the factors. But I don't think sitting at a computer or at a desk in and of itself will do it.
Or in a truck, driving a truck or anything.
No, I don't think there's any evidence of doing it. Is now she a truck driver?
No. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it's a pink email. I can see it's pink over there, but I don't know if she's a truck driver, but I can tell it's a female email because it's on pink paper.
But she didn't send the email to us.
Oh, gosh, I forgot.
She didn't prepare this on a pink piece of paper and send it
Maybe that's what Adam did. You know, the guy emails, I've noticed, are always on blue, and the girl emails are always on pink.
I hadn't noticed that.
You're not as observant.
We like hearing your thoughts, whether you send the email from a sitting or standing position, or prepare it and hand deliver it from Juarez, Mexico, right here to our studio. Be sure to send them or bring them to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have our medical myth buster coming up. We have more research coming up. Lots more of your calls, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number if you'd like to talk with Zorba. But research before our next call, Zorba, and this interesting to me, a number of studies suggesting a stronger link than maybe we had previously thought between Parkinson's and pesticides.
Right. And pesticides, you know, are a big issue in our society. You look at the way people are thinking about their food and you realize that organics have increased dramatically, still a small percentage of the overall food market. But when Walmart gets into the organics business, you realize that it must be a huge, huge issue in terms of what people want.
Yeah.
And they want it because, among other things, they're worried about pesticides and insecticides. What do they do? And this was an article that looked at that.
Yeah, we'll talk about what they found.
Parkinson is a big problem in America. A big problem as you get older. It's a movement disorder. You have a tremor. Mm-hmm. The tremor is a tremor that often occurs at rest. Mm-hmm. You can have inability to start and initiate movement when you're actually going from place to place. It's hard to get up. Once you start movement, it's hard to stop movement. And then you can develop a Parkinson's dementia. Right. And, you know, the best, you know, the poster person for Parkinsonism is Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, what's this pesticide?
Well, this is says that there may be a pesticide that is the commonly used pesticide that appears, a pesticide called Paraquat, that appears to have 2 to 3 times the risk, if you're exposed to that, of developing Parkinsonism. And it looked at farm workers. Farm workers, it's an observational study. It wasn't obviously a double-blind study, but these were farm workers who got exposed to Paraquat, and they were twice as likely or 3 times as likely to develop Parkinsonism. And there are some companion animal studies that show the same thing, that there's a buildup of a protein in the brain that we believe is linked to Parkinsonism. Parkinsonism is where there's a lack of a neurotransmitter, serotonin, and ultimately dopamine. It affects something called dopamine transition, and it may be, from the animal model, it appears to also be an issue. So clearly, this is one insecticide that has to be studied, and if it's the case, we got to get it out of the food supply.
Well, should the rest of us now be thinking more seriously than some of us have about
organics? Well, you know, one of the issues, whenever we have studies like this that come out of, you have people who say, well, that's where I'm going to organic food because I don't want to think about this. And I think if that's your fear, you can do that. But like other things in science, many of the things that we find in observational studies turn out not to be true when we look at them later on. So I don't think we know that there's a link between Paraquat and Parkinsonism, but there may be a link, and you know, buyer beware.
You can never double blind this sort of thing.
No, you would never be able to do it. But you could do animal models. There are animals that develop Parkinsonism. I think if you're concerned, organics are the way to go, because we know that organic food is not grown with pesticide.
Again, that number is 800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener now in Talbot, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
I heard Zorba talking with a caller some time ago about humidifiers, and he recommended the sonic type rather than the steamer type. And I've always been a little nervous of the sonic type, and I wanted to know what he thought of the differences between the two.
Well, what are you nervous about as far as the sonics are concerned?
Well, I know that the human body is something like, what, 80% water, and I see the water bubbling in that container, and I know that the sound waves don't stop at the well of the container, and I wonder, you know, what it does to me in the house while I'm walking around with that thing going all the time. And when I see the ads for the little sonic gadgets that you can get to drive the moles out of the garden or the mice out of your house, I just get a little nervous.
You don't want to be driven out of your house or have your body affected.
Sure. Well, it's very interesting because I never really thought of it that way, thought of this in the same way. You're right. I see the you know, get rid of mole ads with those too. Well, there are three basic different kinds of putting humidity into the house, you know, short of, you know, well, actually there are four ways. The low-tech way is you put a pot of water on the radiator and let it just stay there and keep on filling it up with the water. That's the low-tech way, you know, or bowls of water. Then you have hot air humidification, which is okay, but if there are children in the house, they're going to touch it. I mean, I remember as a kid touching it. It had steam. Steam is hot, and it can burn. So it's a no-no wherever there are young children involved. And that's an okay way to do it. That's really, you know, the most inexpensive, but not the most inexpensive to run. Then you have cold air moisture vaporizers, and they work basically by blowing the water from a fan through a filter. Filter has to be changed on a regular basis. And basically, that's how the water gets into the air. It's really blown through this fan through a filter. And then you have the ultrasonics. And the ultrasonics literally shake the water. They shake the water so that the water becomes these very, very tiny little droplets. They actually produce the droplets that are the smallest, so they actually go the deepest into the lung. They are the most expensive when you first buy them, but they are the cheapest to run, and they are the quietest. So that's why... that's why I like them. So,
well, what about the possible dangers involved here, or are there any?
You know, one of the dangers you're worried about is the sound that the ultrasonic makes. Is that what you're worried about?
Well, I'm worried about the sound waves affecting the water in my body the way they would affect the water in the container.
Uh-huh. Well, they won't do that. They shouldn't do that because you're farther away from the source.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain safety things that are put on it. Do you have a microwave in the house?
Yes.
Well, microwaves are, you know, shielded, and so the microwaves don't go out into the house. And people were worried about that. Especially because years ago it said, you know, stay away if you've got a pacemaker. So, you know, microwaves stay within the contraption, you know, the gizmo. The same is true of the ultrasonic. It stays within that contraption. It really doesn't go somewhere else. And I really don't know how those mole things work, except I bought one once and they don't work very well. That much I can tell you because I still have moles around the house. So I think if you're worried that this is going to affect your body adversely, there's no evidence for that. And I really doubt from a scientific point of view that it would do that. So,
okay,
do
that. That's
now,
very
how's
comforting.
Your house? Do you vaporize your house? Do you have a vaporizer on in your house in the wintertime?
I like fountains. So I have a little fountain in almost every room. And in the winter, I use the steamers because I don't have any young children.
And use that around. But don't the fountains put enough water in your atmosphere?
In the summertime and in the spring and fall, they certainly do. But in the winter, not so much.
Not so much. Mm-hmm. Use the hot air. And the hot airs are just fine to use as long as there aren't kids that are. So you don't have any desire to put your hand over that steam that comes out?
No.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you for taking my question.
You're welcome. 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster. Today's myth is an old adage about one of your favorite drinks. It has to do with coffee and kids. Will coffee drinking stunt a child's growth?
No, not at all. That is a myth, and that was a myth that my mother, God bless her soul, may she rest in peace, also subscribed to.
You drink a lot of coffee.
I drink a lot of
coffee.
You're
a short guy.
I'm a short guy, but I didn't drink it when I was younger because my mother thought that if I drank coffee, I would be short. It would stunt my growth. And my cousin Marilyn Fabry, she gave coffee to her daughter Linda.
Yeah.
And I can remember when we would get together, which my mother would do with my cousin Marilyn because they had bleach blonde hair. and they'd bleach each other's hair. Linda got to have coffee, and I couldn't because my mother said it will stunt your growth.
Is Linda 6 foot or so?
No, we're the same size. The same size at all. It had no difference at all. But nobody really knows, you know, this particular myth, how it got started, you know, where it came from. It may be because it's thought that people who drank a lot of coffee didn't drink a lot of calcium and milk and dairy products. But nonetheless, studies have shown track adolescents. They drink caffeinated products such as soda, and the fact is they grow just as tall as anybody
else. I'll bet I know where it started or
where?
How it started.
Your mother or my mother?
No. How this myth got started. Okay. I'll bet just like every other thing that parents throw at their kids when they don't know what to say and they don't want the kid to do it. Don't do X. It'll stunt your growth. Don't drink coffee. Don't whatever.
Don't smoke cigarettes. It'll stunt your growth.
It'll stunt your growth. Whether there's any evidence or not.
That's right. Do your homework. If you don't do your homework, it'll stunt your growth. That's right.
But anyway, it won't.
Kids, it is a myth.
Kids drink as much coffee as you want.
You children out there, children in public radio land, you brew yourself up some nice espresso this morning. You 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds, drink all the coffee you want to.
Do you have a myth for us? We'll try to bust it.
I can see it now.
Or prove it right. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. A listener now in Somersville, Missouri. Hi.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
I have a question. I'm 26 years old, and I have kids at home, and I'm the only guy and the only person in my family that smokes. Mm-hmm. And I've tried the patches, and I've tried the gum, and, you know, the only things that the gum and the patches ever did for me, the gum, bad taste in my mouth, the patches just made my arm itch. So, and I've tried to quit, and I get really aggravated. I get, you know, sometimes even mad when I try to quit, you know. And I don't want my kids to see that. You know, I don't want them growing up smoking because my mother passed away with cancer, and she smoked for the longest time. And her sisters, you know, she has 3 or 4 sisters, and one of them passed away with cancer. And, you know, and cancer runs in both of our families. So, you know, I want to give my kids the best health advice that I can, and I really don't do that with, you know, smoking and then trying to get onto them if they try it.
So you're ready. So it sounds like you're ready to quit smoking.
Yeah, I'm ready to quit smoking. Just sometimes it feels like the, you know, like if I don't have a cigarette, I'm going to explode.
Mm-hmm, sure.
You know,
Well,
from the inside.
You bet. That's the addiction. That's the hook part of it.
Well, that's a big hook. Explode. My goodness.
Yeah. When was the last time you tried to quit smoking?
About a year and a half ago.
Year and a half ago. Uh-huh. Did you go without cigarettes at all?
Yeah, I went cold turkey, and I've even tried that. I went cold turkey for about, I think it was about 3 months. And the worst part about it is, you know, if I'm not around it, then I don't think about it as much. But it seems like as soon as I quit, everybody's smoking around me.
Yeah, right. Right.
It's like the world just wants me to keep smoking because they won't stay away from me.
It's a conspiracy. They're all just smoking around me. Do you go out to bars? Is that where you start? I mean, a lot of people restart again when they have a beer or a drink. Is that what happened to you?
No, it's usually when, you know, I just go to town or something and I get around my friends, you know. I try not to go to the bars because I don't want... I try to set a better example for my kids, you know, and, you know, show them how to actually, you know, act in this world instead of, you know, this hate relationship everybody has most of the time.
Absolutely. Good day. I think that is exactly it. You know, you're quitting for the right reasons for yourself, for your kids. I've got a couple of good suggestions. First of all, there's a new drug on the market that I happen to think is really good called Chantix, Chantix. It's a
Can
new
you
drug.
Say that again?
You bet. Chantix, Chantix, and it is it blocks the receptor that stimulates nicotine, so it blocks it. So when you smoke cigarettes, you don't get the same buzz. It's got a very good success rate, about a 40% success rate. At 1 year, it's a little lower than that. It's not at 40%, but a lot of people stay on this for 3 to 6 months. You don't take it with the patch because it blocks the receptors. You don't take it with the gum. You don't take it with bupropion, which is the other pill that also works for a lot of people. That's another good pill, a pill called Zyban. Zyban.
Can you use something like
both of them together? Or
you can. You can use them both together. You can use the Zyban and the Chantix together. The Zyban is an antidepressant that actually gets people to quit smoking. And there are advantages and disadvantages to either one or both of them together. But that ought to be combined with counseling. And every state in the union has a toll-free number where you can call up and speak to a real-life counselor, and they can give you really good advice on how to quit smoking. They really give great advice over the telephone. So I highly recommend the counseling and either Chantix or Zyban. Zyban can come in a generic, so it's a little cheaper. I think that'll make a difference.
If you don't know, how do you find that 800
number? You call up your local state health department. That's what you do. They'll have it. You call up your doctor. Your doctor, like in our office, we have, we know where that number is. You call up your local hospital. They'll know where the number is, too. But I would recommend the counseling. And the reason is you went back after 3 months, and so you need to know some other tricks on how to keep from going back the next time. But you are ready, man. I highly recommend you do it. It sounds like you're ready to become a non-smoker for yourself and your kids, and I congratulate you on it. It's not easy to do.
Thank you very much for the call, and good luck to you. And
good luck.
Speaking of quitting tobacco, Zorba, let's help out Jim from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He has just quit chewing tobacco, cold turkey, and would like to know how long he can expect the severe cravings he's been dealing with.
Well, it can last for a while. I mean, those cravings can last for some people a couple of weeks, for some people a couple of months. It really depends on your individual predisposition, how addicted you were. Cigarettes are the ones that are most likely
to produce. You think cigarettes are harder to kick than chewing tobacco?
Well, I think tobacco is always hard to quit. And so, you know, cigarettes are much more common than chewing tobacco. So the addiction appears, it's much easier to get hooked on the habit for cigarettes. I think for some people, quitting is really tough, and for other people, it's easy. They go, oh, I quit, and it was no problem. But that's not most people. Most people who smoke have a tough time quitting. If you look at the smokers, for instance, 20% of the society smokes. Add in chewing tobacco and others, you've got another maybe 5%. If you look at them, 90% of them would like to quit.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people, and then obviously it's not that easy.
But once you've quit, you say the outside limit, 2-3 months?
Well, sometimes, but some people need to have treatment for 6 months.
Six.
But you'll often have cravings for
two to
2 to 3 months. But just like alcoholism, you look at it as one day at a time, you know, at a time. Today, I am a non-smoker, I have a craving, and I will deal with it. And that's really the way to look at it. So.
We hope that there's no way to quit Zorba Pastor on your health once you're addicted, so keep your tips, comments, and questions coming. Just send them in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next time, Zorba.
Hey, pleasure. Stay well, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
And don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping that you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0607Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.